from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, a 2:05 start to the PM team here. Chris Muller hanging out at South Hills Kia in Peters Township. And by the way, they are the proud sponsors of the Fan Twitter feed at 93.7 The Fan. Yes, this very same South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Visit me today as we get rolling with the PM team. That was Trey Essex. And I guess great minds think alike, although I hesitate to call Adam Crowley a great mind. But they had the idea on the morning show today. It was probably Doran's idea, let's be honest. Definitely wasn't Harry Callis. He was busy responding to pictures of dinner that I was posting last night. It was probably Doran's idea to book Trey Essex, former Steelers offensive lineman, to talk about the woeful performance that the offensive line turned in that second preseason game against Buffalo, a game that I would charitably describe as one of the five worst football games I've ever watched, and I was in the building for Iowa 6, Penn State 4 in Big Ten action many, many years ago. But I was going to book Trey Essex today when I woke up. Didn't have a chance to listen to those guys really while they were doing their show, so I missed the fact that he was on with them. But I was going to go right to the source. I was going to go right to Trey Essex and say, Trey, shoot it to me straight about these guys. How much is there to be concerned with? And you just heard some of what he had to say there, which wasn't as charitable as maybe you thought a fellow offensive lineman would be towards Broderick Jones, which wasn't overall particularly complimentary given the performance that they turned out against the Bills. And that's where I wanted to start today, because we went through, we turned over a new leaf collectively on this show yesterday. Pony, after basically falling victim to the preseason hype train in spectacular fashion for 2 years in a row, especially last year, I believe he was saying MVP votes for Kenny Pickett, Pickett to Pickens, Montana to Rice 2.0, things like that. Things that have made us laugh at him for months since that time period. He has turned over that new leaf, and yesterday he made sure to tell everybody, hey, this is the preseason, we shouldn't overreact to anything, you should take everything you watch with a grain of salt. I do tend to agree with that overall philosophy when it comes to preseason football, with one pretty notable exception. There is one thing about this time of year that I do think is relevant, that I do think should be followed closely, that I do think should be observed closely, and that is basic physical stuff. At its core, football is a game of a lot of strategy and everything else, but when you drill it down to the component parts, it's blocking, it's tackling, it's winning man-on-man matchups. That's why there's plenty of people who will tell you football ain't for everybody. You got to hit. You got to be physical. You got to be this, that, or the other. You have to do all these things while getting hit, while being physical, so on. What I saw from that offensive line did give me some cause for alarm. I think there are a couple reasons to actually, not to buy into like this overwhelmingly negative vibe that I heard Starkey decrying at the very end of his show just now, but reasons to, I think, at least allow yourself to have some healthy concern going into the season. The offensive line, if it's constructed the way the Steelers eventually want it to look, I think, has two rookies and a first-year starter at a different position, Broderick Jones at left tackle eventually, God willing, occupying 60% of its spots. It's got two guards that are in place that I think the Steelers trust implicitly in Seumalo and James Daniels. But 60% of it would be either rookies and or guys playing a new position. And to watch them get worked over, to watch Broderick Jones get dog-walked the way he did by Greg Rousseau, collectively, to have Arthur Smith talking about pressure up the middle basically being something that's just going to destroy plays before they even start. When you see that in a game where you know you don't have a ton more time before the season starts, you have one more actual game, you have X number of practices, to see that level of, I would say, ineptitude, shakiness, whatever you want to call it, just general roughness of their play is cause, in my opinion, to at least turn a side eye towards it. I am, believe it or not, not somebody panicking about the quarterback situation. I'm not somebody panicking about like how the offense will actually look in terms of skill position players, or is Van Jefferson going to be good enough? I don't think he probably will be, but that's beside the point right now. I'm not somebody that's putting their offense completely in the ground before they ever play a game that actually counts. But I am somebody who cannot help but twitch an eye and raise an eyebrow in a little bit of alarm at a group that was supposed to be their sort of bread and butter outfit, right? Like, it was supposed to be the thing that they had retooled the most heading into this season, look so shaky right off the jump, and have guys that looked beat up, frankly. Nate Herbig, we already know, is done with the rotator cuff, so that's going to thrust Frazier into the starting role. Half the reason this is such a mess with Broderick Jones is because Troy Fautanu has the MCL tweak, and they want to be very careful about that, but they seemingly, according to Jerry Dulac, have designs on him being the starter at right tackle. Jones himself is dealing with an elbow problem of some kind, at least. It is reason to at least make a little sideways glance, I think, when you take stock of that offensive line. And to hear Trey Essex tell it, it wasn't sunshine and rainbows there. I did not hear, you know, I listened back to the interview, I thought the guys, to their credit, asked him all the pertinent questions I would be asking of a guy like that who's played offensive line in the NFL. I did not hear a ton of excuse-making. I think Trey was a little bit less alarmist than some. I'm not worried yet, stuff like that. But I think he knows subpar play, and I think he knows something that needs to get rectified, and I think he knows when doing those things is going to be, you know, necessarily difficult given the time constraints and the practice constraints and the hitting constraints. I think he sounded the tone of a guy who knows all of those things right now. So an educated observer, a guy, as Crowley put it, that they put on the show to educate them on the offensive line, didn't sound like a guy who was particularly thrilled or particularly optimistic that things are going to be fixed over pretty soon. And here's the reason why the soon part of this matters. Everybody knows what the Steelers' schedule looks like this year. It's a meat grinder. It is bad in the second half. It is one of the nastiest two-month runs down the stretch you'll ever see a team have in terms of A, quality of opposition, and B, how that opposition is specifically lined up. And lack of maybe what you would call, rest days, frankly, between tough games. If this offensive line is scuffling out of the gate, it automatically makes a game like the Atlanta game harder. If Bo Nix actually looks like something approaching the real deal, it makes the Denver game a little bit tougher. It makes the part of the schedule, if they are struggling early, that was supposed to be a place where they could make hay, a place where suddenly you're looking at them with a little bit more of a critical eye and wondering if they're going to stub their toe once or twice. Newsflash, they aren't going to be able to afford that if it does happen. And so we hear Trey Essex talk about it. We've heard others get into this. I'm wondering, we are not in overreaction mode. That's not what this preseason's about. We learned our lesson last year on the flip side of this equation. But I want to know at 412-928-9370, how concerned, let's talk like serious, sober adults here. Let's not talk like screaming people in a disaster movie. How concerned are you, big picture, with this Steelers offensive line? This, for me, it was the centerpiece of what Andy Weidel and Omar Khan were collectively, and even Mike Tomlin, were trying to do. They were trying to get back to some identifiable roots. They were spending premium draft capital, even premium money, on that part of the roster. How worried are you about a retooled line that is supposed to be in some ways the centerpiece of what they're trying to build here? 412-928-9370. Do you share Trey Essex some of his concerns about this line? 412-928-9370. Do you think Pat Meyer can get this thing straightened out before the season starts? 412-928-9370. Bottom line, even though it's preseason, are you genuinely concerned about the state of play with that Steelers O-line? 412-928-9370.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly, beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
370, that's the
first team offense needs to play again, at least one quarter. They'll have, 13-14 days off? No, 15 days off after that. Obviously, with the injury concern, you always want to keep that in the back of your head. But with the fact that we are in a new system, with the fact that we have not performed the way we wanted to, you do want them to get more reps. And I think you go at least one quarter with your first team starting offensive line, just so they can mesh a little bit more.
That was Trey Essex with the Fan Morning Show today. Among other things, he talked about right there the desire for him to see this first-team offense go back out there. And I think it means more to me when I hear somebody who actually played in the league and also played a position where I think those injuries can crop up quicker than at other ones, offensive line, obviously. To hear him actually say, no, it's worth it to go out there. Like the juice is worth the squeeze here as far as risk of injury relative to needing to actually play better football and get a little bit more cohesion and gel a little bit more. The fact that Trey Essex is saying, no, it's worth it, kind of tells me where he's at with this team. Like, if you think back to the Roethlisberger days here, he wasn't going to play. They didn't need to. And the offensive line didn't really need to develop cohesion. They knocked the rust off the first series or two at most of the first game of the season, and then you go about your business. You assume you're going to be plenty good enough at that point to win the game, maybe that first game out. And Trey is saying right there, even though the quarterback is a 35-year-old veteran, even though you do have some guys on that offensive line who have been there, done that a little bit, in Sayamalu and Daniels, he wants to see these guys play more. I frankly agree with that. I'm usually a preseason doesn't matter in terms of, you know, leave all of your guys out of it. And the Steelers absolutely, I think, can be questioned about the way that they've practiced. We know Tomlin likes these hard practices, and then you've got guys getting banged up all over the place. But they were so bad in that game. And in fundamental ways that I think transcend the, you know, inherent meaninglessness of the preseason, like just getting beat very basically, that I would actually want to see them go out there and play against Detroit, that first team, for a reasonable period of time. I think this is one of the rare times you would hear me say that it's worth the risk. What say you, 412-928-9370, and do you share Trey Essex's level of concern with this offensive line? Really, it's my level of concern, too. I haven't seen much of anything to like. We do have, by the way, very good prize for the best caller on this, either right now or later in the day. So if you don't have a huge take on this, you might still have a chance. But you have to realize that if somebody delivers a boffo call here, you might lose your chance. It's the real duality of a giveaway on this station. You've got to earn it on this show. You know how we roll. So if you want to wait your turn and you think you're going to roll the dice on somebody not delivering a great phone call early in the show, you might be left high and dry. That's all I'll say. 412-928-9370. To the lines, are we worried about the Steelers' offensive line right now? You know what? I like doing this sometimes, starting the show off strong in terms of callers. Not with a guy chirping us about Mason Rudolph like we had yesterday, but with our number two fan, Jeff in South Park. Hello, Jeff.
So Pony's got the explosive diarrhea today?
I don't know. I think I retired that one for today. Since we are out in public, I don't want to just keep throwing that one out there. But you can, if you believe it in your heart, Jeff, it will be so.
Well, it takes two to lie, one to lie, and one to listen. So,
well, what anyway. Do you got on this O-line? I mean, I know that we have turned over this collect. I didn't turn over a new leaf because I was a sane person last year. I wasn't the one saying that the quarterback was headed to the Hall of Fame. So how do you actually feel, though, about the O-line? Because I think that's one of the only positions, Jeff, collectively, that I will actually put some stock into a performance in exhibition football.
No, I'm concerned. And to be honest with you, I was going to be concerned anyways, even before all the poor play we've seen in the preseason so far, just because we're essentially going to have three new starters. You're going to have two rookies. And then Broderick Jones is going to be moving back over to the other side. So if you want to count him as a new starter, I kind of do, because that's not the position he played last year. So I was concerned about them to begin with. And the fact that Fotanu is already banged up and they're not looking good. And then you combine it with the fact that the schedule, that's the part of the year that we're supposed to be winning games. I think the last 2 years in a row, the offensive line definitely got stronger as the year went on. They gelled, and like it was evident in the run game. And like I was kind of thinking, if the rookies at least worked out, that we were going to kind of see the same sort of progression this year. So off the bat, that is concerning, because that's supposed to be the soft part of the schedule. So I'm actually kind of trying to mentally ramp myself up to have this be almost like the dreaded word, bridge year. And like the fact that the schedule is soft in the beginning, but the line might not gel and it might adversely affect the team. And then maybe by the time they get their act together, they got that meat grinder at the end of the schedule. I just have to keep telling myself this. I'm trying to mentally prepare myself for this now so that I'm not screaming bloody murder all 17 weeks of the season while it's going on. I need to keep telling myself, you knew this could happen. You prepared yourself mentally, man. Stop screaming at the TV.
Jeff, guess what's going to happen, though? And that's a very sane, sober, rational way to think about it. If everything happens that exact way, you and everybody else will be screaming at their televisions. I can safely say that. You can prepare yourself all you want. I'm not going to be this. I'm not going to be that. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. The fact of the matter is, if they gel, like all that matters is wins and losses here. If they gel late and are getting beat because they're gelled and they're playing better, but against really good competition, bad news. You've got a major problem on your hands. They're still going to be losing those games. You're not going to feel good because the O-lines look better. You're going to feel bad because they're losing. That's probably the crux of this for me, is that best case scenario, it seems like most of these issues get ironed out pretty early in the season. But that it takes a couple of games, and those are games that, by and large, you cannot afford to lose. And I feel like that line could be a problem during games that they're supposed to win because of all these hiccups, all these little stop and starts, and that it's going to come back to bite them. Joe is in Brookline. Now he's on 93.7 The Fan. Hey, Joe.
Chris, how are you?
I'm good, man. What's up?
No, I've been worried since last year. I mean, you draft the left tackle, Jones, and now you draft Fontani. When are you going to leave Broderick Jones on the left side and just let him play where he's comfortable. I know Dan Moore is your safe haven or whatnot, but Frazier's going to be, I think, just fine eventually, and you could play Herbick as your eventually when he comes back, not now, but
well,
he'll be your guy. Yeah, but eventually. I'm just saying, put the guys where they need to be, where you drafted them, where they're supposed to play. They're number one draft picks. You didn't draft them not to be your number one starter.
Joe, you're doing the thing where you get me real fired up because you repeat to me, not that you were doing it in the wrong way, but that you tell me my biggest sticking point, or you point out my biggest angry issue with this coaching staff, and that I have to think about it all over again. And that is the fact that they drafted a guy. They drafted really back-to-back two left tackles in the first round. That's where Fautanu played in college. We know that they traded up to go get Broderick Jones because they liked him so much. And they have continued to prioritize seemingly the I don't even want to call it the needs. They have prioritized and accommodated the limitations of a guy who's a fourth-round pick who's never really been that good at left tackle because he can't play right tackle. Like, think of any other business. Like, you've got somebody, say on the air, I could only talk about the NBA. That was the only sport I had any feel for. And instead of saying, Chris, you might have to find another job or find another market, our boss, Craig, was like, you know what, Pony, you need to talk a lot more basketball on this show with Chris. That's his wheelhouse. That's essentially like a quick and dirty comparison to what they're doing with Dan Moore. And it drives me and probably anybody else that's actually watched Dan Moore attempt to block people completely insane. 412-928-9370. Continue if you want on this idea of the offensive line being more than just a preseason blip on the radar, on the offensive line being an actual problem for this team. College Football Minute live from South Hills Kia, Route 19, Peters Township. It's the PM team on the road today. Still got something great to give away here. You're going to have to deliver a very excellent phone call to do it. We'll wait and see for what we run into there. You can deliver it on the fan hotline presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. That music means it's time for, like I said, the College Football Minute. Donnie, I don't pay as much attention to college football as I think any of us do the NFL. I think we kind of established that obviously we are an NFL show, Pittsburgh's an NFL town, etc. Were you even aware that the position of general manager was a thing in college football now? Is this news to you or anything?
Not until you brought it up, and then I pulled it up.
So I find it funny because one of the things we still hear about NIL is some of these coaches, most of whom are making high seven figures, a couple of them making low eight figures, just obscene amounts of money, right? They bellyache and they grouse about how much they've got to pay some of these guys to stay at their schools, and it's the wild, wild west. Then I see this. Never heard of this guy in my life. His name is Courtney Morgan. He is apparently the general manager of the Alabama football team. Courtney Morgan just got himself a nice raise because USC came after him for the same job. $825,000 on a three-year deal. He is now the highest paid front office man in college. The funniest part about this is he came with Kalen DeBoer when he took the job at Alabama, and his initial contract was done in February, $500,000. Now, he's been working since then, obviously. You got to work and you got to do all the recruiting. And basically, it sounds like to me a general manager in college football is similar now to what the role is in the pros. You're looking to procure talent. You're not scouting necessarily, but you are. So it's the same thing. Like, it's helping the coach with, like, recruiting because one guy can't do it all, right? He got a $325,000 annual raise without actually having Alabama play any games. Like, without actually seeing the players that he recruited and general managed at Alabama do anything on the field. $325,000 on a raise just because somebody else wanted him. Your thoughts on general managers in college football?
Well, and he was already the highest paid front office figure in college football. Like you mentioned, I had never heard of him. I did not know that he was apparently under the same position with Washington. Behind, you know, the team that almost won the national championship last year. They were the runner-up in the entire country. I guess this is just the way that college athletics are going, that you're going to see more of these actual front office pro, like professional level type positions in college, because now the focus is not only bringing players in, it's about looking at players at other schools and also keeping the players you already have. Like, it is turning more into a pro sport, especially the big ones, especially football, hoops a little bit, but football obviously the main focal point here. It's turning more and more into an actual professional setting in the front office than it's ever been before.
Which is why my main like takeaway from this, fine, if that's going to be how it is, clearly the money's there to pay these guys. Like, they'll always cough up the coin. I just want to hear people stop moaning and groaning about the athletes getting their cut, right? Like, that's what is most distasteful to me. It's this constant drumbeat of, can you believe this selfish kid wanted X, Y, and Z? Well, if somebody else is willing to pay him, why shouldn't he go get it? A guy none of us have ever heard of at a position many of us didn't even know existed within college football is making almost $1 million a year to do essentially GM work. Now, my other thought on it, Donnie, is this. Maybe Donnie Football becomes the general manager, I don't know, St. Vincent, something like that. I mean, I feel like you could handle this role at a lower level school and maybe start your big rise through the ranks of college football.
I got a couple contacts over there. I could put a word in.
Now, I guess this position at a high school would be athletic director, but what would it be? Probably North Allegheny would be the first high school to actually hire a general manager.
The University of North Allegheny.
The U. Put up the U. They'll have one. They probably already do. There's probably some people in NA thinking, oh, Mueller's trying to make a funny. Little does he know that we actually, in fact, have this.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, think about some of the, like, academies, though, that have that are just, like, college
IMG's
football factories.
IMG's a college team. I've said this.
Yeah, I mean, even a team that will be featured in the KDKA Kickoff Classic on this weekend, St. Francis from Baltimore, Maryland,
mm-hmm.
They're in a similar vein. They are a team that lost to IMG by 3 points last year, so they're not far behind the IMG, like the god school for future NFLers that we hear about all the time. Like, schools like that, I bet, already have positions in place.
It's going to become more professionalized, and the sooner everyone ditches the pretense that, like, wow, we're losing amateurism, like the club system for soccer overseas in Europe, like those guys come into an academy or like come into a team's feeder system, and it is very formalized and very professionalized, and because it's been that way for a long time, nobody bats an eyelash at it. Eventually that stuff will get like this over here, and I think probably the whole industry will be a lot more honest for it. Thank you for the College Football Minute, Donnie. You can put the music down, but it's a perfect time to bring on somebody whose favorite school probably has a bigger budget for all of this stuff than any other in the country. Johnny the Barber, do you have any thoughts on Alabama's general manager getting a raise before he actually did any work?
It's a joke. Ohio State, the position you're speaking about, the Ohio State cleaned house, got rid of Geno Smith, of course, at AD, who wasn't 100% in on football. When Ohio State went after two of the higher positioned people in college football and paid through the nose. Mainly, they went after, I think it was Texas. Yeah, it was Texas's GM, and then brought him in. So, I mean, this is a very competitive position, believe it or not.
Johnny, this is the most serious I've ever heard you about a topic on the air, ever. In your entire fan calling career, you sound like deadly serious about this, because for you, Buckeyes football is more than just a game, isn't it?
Oh, it's a way of life. I mean, you're seeing my way of life affecting you with going after Nora Jones instead of, you know, bringing in the real Jones. You know, I wish the Steelers could just take a magic DeWand and fix their line, but it's just not going to happen.
Johnny, would you like to say anything else to us on your way out the door?
O-H-I-O.
How do you feel about a magic DeWand Jones, Donnie?
That was a good line from Johnny.
I got to give him credit, and I'm a Nora Jones fan, so that one stings a little bit. What a perfect time to bring the old barber on, though. I would say that you're going to see I think that's going to be the biggest thing that gets revealed as like a farce, right? Is the idea that these schools, like, where are we going to get the money? And I never believed it. You probably didn't. You probably have a healthy cynicism about you too on this one, Donnie. They said at the advent of NIL, when guys were starting to be able to command some money to pick their spot, oh, what are we going to do? How are we going to afford all this? I think this Alabama thing, I know that they're not every program. I know Pitt doesn't have the same amount of resources as Bama or as Ohio State or as Georgia. The big 20 or so schools that really do care this much and have that engaged of an alumni base, I would include Penn State in this group. I assume you would too. They are absolutely going to find the money, by and large, to compete on the same level resource-wise as a Bama or an Ohio State. You're going to hear them still throw the token comment out of, oh, you know, this has gone in the wrong direction. They will all scrape through the couch cushions and find what they need to do what they think they need to do to keep pace. And you can pretty much take that to the bank in college football. All right, coming up, I'll first tell you that Fan Weather is brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. The Chevy Summer Drive continues at Sun Chevrolet, up to $7,500 in rebates, terms, conditions, sunchevy.com. Unseasonably cool today. Not even getting to 70 degrees, high of 69, low of 53. Good sleeping weather overnight tonight.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.